1957 was huge for Leonard Bernstein. In September of that year, the musical West Side Story opened on Broadway, with Bernstein's music to lyrics by 27-year-old Stephen Sondheim, and it became an instant hit.
I like to be in America, okay by me in America, everything free in America, for a small fee in America.
Right around the same time, Bernstein became the conductor and music director of the New York Philharmonic. When Bernstein took that big job, he agreed a key part of it would be doing a series of concerts for very young people. And he insisted that those concerts be broadcast on the new medium of television. With that, an unlikely TV star was born. As part of our ongoing series on American icons, Sarah Fischko takes us there.
Carnegie Hall in New York City, the home of the world's greatest musical events. Today's event is one in a series of New York Philharmonic Young People's Concerts.
To explore the Young People's Concerts,
under the musical direction of Leonard Bernstein,
written and hosted by the very multi-talented Mr. Bernstein, is to explore the thoughts and spirit of that man, the composer and maestro known as Lenny.
And here is Mr. Bernstein.
He was a new kind of maestro. He had a rare openness, recalls Arnie Lang, who was for 5 decades a percussionist in the New York Philharmonic.
Because with all the years I played with so many different conductors, I knew nothing about them. But Bernstein, you always felt, was a person.
The idea of doing classical concerts for young people was not new. But starting in the 1950s, Bernstein made it new, by pouring every ounce of his personal self into every single concert broadcast, starting with concert number 1 in January 1958, when Lenny strode out from backstage at Carnegie Hall, lifted his baton, and led the orchestra in a stirring rendition of this then-popular favorite. Right from the start, Bernstein gave to his young audience, and he took away. After the attention-getting fun of the piece by Rossini that kids everywhere recognized as the opening theme from The Lone Ranger, he slid right into the lesson for the day.
But it really isn't about The Lone Ranger at all. It's about notes, E-flats and F-sharps. You see, no matter how many times people tell you stories about what music means, forget them. Stories aren't what music means at all. Music is never about anything. Music just is.
Music just is. If that sounds like a sophisticated message, it was, whether delivered from the podium or from the piano, which was positioned on stage so Bernstein could sit down and play to illustrate.
Take this piece by Chopin. Beautiful, isn't it? But what's it about? Nothing.
Bernstein was convinced that young people could understand anything if it was well delivered. Adults had already been exposed to Bernstein's musical musings on TV earlier in the 50s. He had appeared on the landmark show Omnibus, a Sunday culture program, just as Arturo Toscanini, conductor of the NBC Symphony, had finished his run on television. Author Alicia Kufstein-Penck wrote a book on the Young People's Concert.
Toscanini stopped filming in 1954, and 1954 is when Bernstein shook the world with his Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, where he painted the score on the floor. So that was just brilliant TV for 1954.
The whole atmosphere for the mass consumption of serious music seemed to change overnight.
Then the oboe.
Though you'd have to say all these programs were landing in a different world. A world, says composer John Corigliano, which embraced classical music.
The Bell Telephone Hour presents...
It was on the major networks. We had NBC Opera Theater. We had operas and concerts on television. Horowitz's return in 65 was a televised event.
Classical music was loved, and it was regularly taught in school. It was part of a good curriculum.
So, in 1957, the forces for the young people's concerts began to assemble. Carnegie Hall was on board, the orchestra itself, the New York Philharmonic, and CBS, then widely known as the Tiffany Network, so-called for its perceived elegance and high standards. But even with all those venerable institutions lined up, it was still Lenny's show.
And here is Mr. Bernstein.
He was entirely responsible for all the scripts. Producer-director of the broadcasts was Roger Englander.
With Bernstein writing the script and my plotting the shots, we got along terribly well. It was new in its format. It was so simple, but so direct.
The idea was to treat young people and classical music with respect. Bernstein believed in teaching kids to listen to music, as he said, for its own values, not through pictures, dancers, cartoons, or other gimmicks. The main ingredients were to be music and him. With that in mind, Englander set up his Camera One. That was a camera in the back of the orchestra looking right at the orchestra's eye view of the conductor, right at Bernstein's face, full on.
I wanted to introduce extreme close-ups or very wide shots with Bernstein as the center. That was an angle that nobody had ever seen before this time. And when in doubt, that would be the camera that would work most.
Nobody could write melodies like Mozart.
I assisted Roger, and I also was in on the meetings with Lenny on the script.
John Corigliano, Jr., that is. John Corigliano, Sr. was the concertmaster, the first violinist of the New York Philharmonic then. His son, a composer, worked with Englander on the camera shots.
We both had scores and marked them up, and then we compared them, and then he made a final score that was what he wanted to cut to, because this was live television.
Meanwhile, the TV cameras were trying to follow the shot orders to, for example, feature the piccolo during a solo or to get a close-up of the fascinated six-year-old in the third row.
This was in the 50s. The cameras were huge, and they lumbered around like mastodons. We had six clunky cameras, and everything had to be prepared in advance because there were no such things as rehearsals.
To prepare in advance, they had regular script meetings held in Bernstein's apartment. Lenny had to approve every syllable.
He had to write every word himself because he was going to say those words. And if it were done by somebody else, it wouldn't sound real. That, I think, was the beauty of the show.
So in the meetings, they'd go over the words and try to reconcile the dreaded timings.
And the timings were Lenny moaning and groaning and slapping his head and saying, "You can't cut this, it's the best part," and lots of cigarette smoke. Mary Rogers was there, and Lenny was there, and the cloud that filled the room in 895 Park Avenue was enormous.
Another thing about this new, easy, pleasant kind of music was that it was fun. Those people in lace cuffs and powdered wigs wanted to be entertained. They wanted amusement and pleasure out of music.
Producing the concerts for live network broadcast was, by necessity, a vexing combination of spontaneity and absolute precision.
Time was money. Here was an orchestra of 106 pieces. So if you went over 1 minute, it would be a tremendous amount just in overtime to the orchestra.
And so it went. In the first couple of seasons, Bernstein laid out the most basic ideas about music, as far as he was concerned. What does music mean? What is American music? What is orchestration? And he personally did just about everything that could be done to entertain and engage. In the episode on humor and music, the orchestra plays a piece by Walter Piston. And then Bernstein explains how music can imitate, just like voices.
That's one of the oldest ways of making you laugh, by imitating things or people. Like comedians who do impersonations of famous stars, like impersonating Greta Garbo, "I want to be alone," or impersonating Katharine Hepburn, "Oh, it's lovely, it's just lovely." But
He sings Gilbert and Sullivan as a way to understand music and speed.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the price is not a code from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. It's a mouthful. Well, then.
Another time, Bernstein gets the whole Carnegie Hall audience singing around.
People didn't see that before with music education. Fun wasn't part of it. It was very dry and intellectual.
Hey, you're wonderful. You're all hired.
In the concert called The Latin American Spirit, Bernstein plays rarely heard music and speaks up for his very humanistic worldview.
It's the mingling of these different ancestors, influences, and heritages which makes the Latin American spirit what it is, at any rate, in music.
The concerts were a magnet for children and their parents in what was a different atmosphere for concert going in general.
If they dressed up for it, kids dressing up to go to a concert, they had a certain feeling that this was a great event. We felt that through them and, of course, through the tube of the television.
In this period, television itself was having a bit of an identity crisis as it tried to figure out what it should be. Commercial? Educational? Both those things?
I invite each of you to sit down in front of your own television set when your station goes on the air.
In a famous speech of the moment, Newton Minow, the chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, warned the networks in 1961 to behave responsibly by adding some meaningful programming to what he called the vast wasteland of the TV schedule.
I can assure you that what you will observe is a vast wasteland.
At that point, CBS found it useful to renew Bernstein's broadcasts for several seasons as proof of its good intentions. Bernstein's own children were happy about that, remembers Jamie Bernstein, the eldest of the three.
Alexandra and I would get up in the morning with our dad and accompany him for the entire day. The camera rehearsal for him began at 7 a.m. So that meant that we would wake up around 5:30 and have a sleepy breakfast and drive in semi-darkness across town to Philharmonic Hall.
From Philharmonic Hall in Lincoln Center, home of the world's greatest musical events.
By this time, the concerts had moved slightly uptown to the recently built hall in the Lincoln Center complex, and Bernstein was plugging away at being his charmingly relatable self.
You know, the shape of a musical composition is the hardest thing for most people to grasp.
He quickly figured out that by using pop music, he could really keep his audience interested and focused.
Let's take a pop tune. In fact, let's take a typical Beatles tune.
And I remember when he used And I Love Her by the Beatles to explain ABA form as in sonata form.
First, there's an A section.
And he went to the piano and actually sang in his terrible gravelly voice.
I give her all my love, that's all I do. And if you saw my love, you'd love her too. I love her. That's A, all right?
And the audience just went nuts, and all the girls were squirming and squealing. Now, Roger Englander got all these fabulous audience reactions.
That A section is repeated exactly the same.
Bernstein loved having his own kids involved. He thrived on the curiosity of younger people.
It kind of youthified him in a way. But it didn't take much to youthify him. I think he always was that young person inside, and that's why he was so good at communicating with young audiences.
Here's the night, and so on, right to the end of the piece. Well,
but also there's that magic ingredient. I just can't account for why he was so good on television.
That represents a small step forward from Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
He came along as television came along. They arrived simultaneously and were made for each other. It was just one of those things.
We all knew he was a genius. I mean, nobody doubted that. He could look you in the eyes, and as far as you were concerned, Lenny didn't have eyes for anyone else but you. And he could do that to an audience. he could speak to young people and make them feel like grown-ups. And I don't know of anybody else who's ever done that successfully.
Well, Bernstein certainly is talented. He has all kinds of talents. But then there's Bernstein to operate them for certain purposes.
As far as his conducting was concerned, Leonard Bernstein's youthified, entertainment-influenced, TV-friendly image was not embraced by all, certainly not by all adults. Music critic B.H. Hagen was interviewed in 1963.
He's obviously an extrovert, an exhibitionist, and you can say, well, what difference does it make? Well, if you're that way, you have no discipline. Discipline is important in governing your handling of a piece of music.
And Harold C. Schoenberg, the chief music critic of the New York Times then, frequently addressed the question of just how much glamour and publicity any classical music career could withstand.
He didn't like his conducting and also was very negative about the music.
John Corigliano says Schoenberg never really warmed up to Bernstein's style.
He didn't like the very extravagance and passion that Lenny demonstrated on the podium.
But many critics and millions of people loved those qualities and celebrated Bernstein's years with the New York Philharmonic. And the Young People's Concerts had a long run on CBS, several concerts per year.
My dear young friends, I am happy and proud to welcome you to our 10th season of Young People's Concerts.
They were amazingly successful. The Nielsen ratings were always good.
At one point, with 34 million television sets turned on, 6.5 million of them were tuned to Lenny.
And to add to the festivities, this is also the first season in which all our programs will be seen on television in color, which is why I've got this modishly colorful tie on.
The programs were broadcast in 40 countries, joining American exports such as Bonanza and the Flintstones. So he was a hit on television, but in person, maybe even more so. Conductor Marin Alsop, music director of the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra and the St. Paula Symphony Orchestra, first heard him at age 9, when her father took her to a young people's concert in New York.
I was really overwhelmed when this guy came out to conduct. And first of all, he wasn't wearing the usual garb. I think he had a turtleneck on. He looked really cool, is what I remember thinking. And then the most exciting part was that he turned around and started speaking.
Today's concert is about a composer called Gustav Mahler. But who is this Mahler? Has any one of you ever heard of him? I'll bet not, or at least only...
I thought it was just to me, of course, it was to the whole audience, but his manner was so charismatic and so engaging and so compelling that I just immediately fell in love with him.
That's one of the keys to this Mahler puzzle. He is like a child. His feelings are extreme, exaggerated, like young people's feelings.
I turned to my father and I said, oh, I get it. That's what I want to do. I want to be the conductor.
I think young people can understand Mahler's feelings even better than old ones.
Some people teach to live. Bernstein, no question about it, lived to teach.
My father was for sure a permanent and compulsive teacher, and everything that happened all the time was somehow about teaching.
Bernstein, never fearful of self-examination, knew this well. Much later, in a reflective frame of mind, he said in an interview,
I do feel this, for better or worse, that when I do play music for people, that there is an element there of teaching at the same time. There is this heuristic element. I can't deny it, and I can't rid myself of it.
He was resigned to it.
But what am I going to do? I am cursed with this need to teach.
So the Young People's Concerts and Leonard Bernstein were made for each other, curse and all. For 14 years, they used each other in a most perfect manner. At a time when you could open the foil on your TV dinner, sit back with one of the three television networks and get a dose of cultural education from a guy called Lenny, looking straight at you. There are geniuses all around us now, on YouTube, in TED Talks, at national conferences and symposia. But before all that, there was a one-man band who taught a generation or two how to listen, and even more, how to actually hear.
That's WNYC's Sarah Fischko with our latest American icon. I met Leonard Bernstein once. I was a freshman in college, and he was on campus for a semester as a lecturer. When I told him I'd memorized the lyrics from my mom's West Side Story album as a little boy, and that I liked classical music only because she made me watch young people's concerts, he said, "When do I get to meet this blessed mama?" You can see videos of one of those young people's concerts on our website, studio360.org.